Welcome to The Savage Truth with Cicely Davis. I am your host, Cicely Davis.
Welcome back, American Savages, to The Savage Truth. I am your host, Cicely Davis. Always, as usual, ecstatic to have you join me for yet another episode. We are at 105. We are well on our way, and we are still winning. We're still winning. So if you're joining for the first time, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for giving me consideration to speak and to listen to me and to, you know, take interest. I appreciate you stopping by. Please make sure you come on back. Tell somebody about the show. Bring them back with you next time. For those of you who have been with me from the beginning or the middle or just last week, thank you for coming back. I appreciate that. You are the reason I keep going and why I do this. It's nice to know that beyond this show, that there are people that are like-minded and that are interested in this fantastic, exceptional republic we call America. And so it's a pleasure. It's an absolute pleasure to do this every week. Super excited to have you join me. Now, I have an ask, and it is this: to please like, share, subscribe, and leave a positive review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. So grateful for those platforms for supporting me. As we get into this week's haps, because I talk about it and I'm still talking about it and I've been talking about it since November 5th, and that is the winning, of course, with Donald J. Trump becoming the 47th president, bringing along the talented and amazing J.D. Vance and this exceptional cabinet that he's putting forth. And now we just had two new people added to that cabinet that crossed the finish line. Of course, I'm referring to RFK Jr. and Tulsi Gabbard. Now, we're going to do a little bit of revision here. We're going to kind of go back and just, because both of them were put through the ringer, okay? RFK really went through it. He had a lot of people challenging him. And so we went just, more importantly, we want to just really show the fiery, the fiery questioning and exchange that he had with some of those cabinet members. And so I want to just go ahead and show you a video.
If we want to make America healthy, will you assure the American people that you will fight to do what every other major country on earth does, guarantee health care to every single American?
I'm going to make America healthier than other countries in the world right now.
Will you guarantee do what every other major country does? It's a simple question.
And by the way, Bernie, the problem of corruption is not just in the federal agencies. It's in Congress, too. Almost all the members of this panel are accepting, including yourself, are accepting millions of dollars from the pharmaceutical industry.
Protecting their interests. I thought that that would come. No. I ran for president like you. I got millions of contributions. They did not come from the executives, not one nickel of PAC money from the pharmaceutical industry. They came from workers.
In 2020, you were the single largest
receiver of pharmaceutical money from workers all over this country. Workers,
you were
not a nickel from corporate
PACs. You were the single largest acceptor of pharmaceutical dollars.
No, from workers in the industry.
1.5 million.
Yeah, out of 200 million. All right, but you have not answered last question. You have not answered my question.
RFK Jr. emerged unscathed from a fiery doubleheader of Senate confirmation hearings last month, where Trump's pick to helm 18 influential federal agencies overseeing the nation's food and health endured a barrage of verbal fireworks Lawmakers grilled him over and over and over again over a history of controversial remarks, most notably his persistent, sometimes scientifically debunked, claims about linking vaccines to autism. Democrats seized the moment to highlight Kennedy's longstanding leadership of Children's Health Defense, the nonprofit he funded and served as chair or chief legal counsel. So the organization has been a vocal opponent of vaccine and has repeatedly taken federal government to court, including a legal challenge against the authorization of COVID-19 vaccines for children. But it all came down to Senator Bill Cassidy out of Louisiana, who is, of course, a Republican. With Senate Finance Committee Democrats opposing Kennedy's advancement, of course, doing everything they could to slow the process, to delay the process, right? To just look for an opportunity to gain some clicks and to go viral. Attention turned to Senator Bill Cassidy, again, out of Louisiana, Republican, a physician and chair of the Senate Health Committee. Now, despite previously expressing concerns over Kennedy's history of undermining vaccines confidence, Cassidy issued a last-minute endorsement, securing a very, very narrow, the narrowest of narrow, 14-13 party line vote to move the nomination forward. Okay, so this was almost dead even. Cassidy explained his support came after further discussions with RFK Jr., during which the nominee made key commitments, including regular hearings before the Health Committee, frequent meetings, and committee representations on vaccine safety boards, and a 30-day notice with a hearing for any policy changes. And I quote him, "These commitments and my expectation that we can have a great working relationship to make America healthy again is the basis of my support." Now, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. as health secretary, would be a fascinating and impactful choice, shaking up a system that has long been dominated by bureaucratic stagnation and special interests. That's how I feel. A man unafraid. And that's what we need. We need boldness, we need fearlessness, and we need courage. I'm going to continue to say that for the next 4 years. We need to put on courage and wear it. A man unafraid to challenge the status quo, Kennedy has made a career of questioning government overreach and corporate influence, particularly in the healthcare and pharmaceutical industries. Republicans, who have long, of course, advocated for less government control and more transparency, would find his leadership refreshing. I, for one, do. I'm sure so many of you out there as well. His willingness to take on powerful entities rather than bowing down to them or kowtowing to them suggests he could restore integrity to a department that has often prioritized politics over public health. That's what we need. Someone to actually get in and actually do the job. Okay. One of Kennedy's greatest strengths is his dedication to medical freedom and individual rights, principles that resonate deeply with conservative values. He has been a vocal critic of heavy-handed mandates and the cozy relationship between regulatory agencies and big pharma, which has, of course, been a concern that many Republicans share. I share, Americans share, at a time when trust in public health institutions is at an all-time low. Kennedy's leadership could be the antidote to widespread skepticism. His presence would force long overdue debates about accountability, about scientific transparency, and the balance between public health policy and personal liberty, debates that have been suppressed for far too long. Now, beyond his policy positions, Kennedy's role as health secretary would bring much needed courage and intellectual diversity to an administration that often appears monolithic in its approach, I think. His ability to challenge mainstream narratives, backed by legal expertise and a sharp mind, and that's what we need. We need capability, we need knowledge, and we need a sharp mind. This would actually inspire a more open and honest dialogue about the future of healthcare. And that's really, really important. While some may disagree with his methods, and some have, there is no doubt that his tenure, however, would disrupt the complacency that has plagued Washington for decades. And that's why the left is so upset. That's why, you know, the deep state is so upset. Washington for decades in a political landscape desperate for truth and reform, Kennedy could be just the disruptor needed to bring real change to America's healthcare system. So congratulations to RFK Jr., the healthcare industry in America, and the American health consumer. We should be celebrating. And keeping with the wins, I personally am not tired of the wins. Tulsi Gabbard is another name that we can pump our fists in celebration for, Tulsi Gabbard has also crossed the finish line.
So I take your answer, you know, and these are your quotes. Brave, please join my bipartisan legislation calling for charges to be dropped against him. Do you disagree that legislation was not appropriate? Do you believe he is brave or not?
Yeah,
back those words.
Once again, Senator, Edward Snowden broke the law. He also released information
that
exposed the United States government's illegal
programs. Your legislation and your words are still your beliefs. Yes or no, please.
I'm making myself very clear. Edward Snowden broke the law. He released information about the United States government's illegal activities.
Ma'am,
if I may just finish my thoughts, Senator. In this role that I've been nominated for, if confirmed as Director of National Intelligence, I will be responsible for protecting our nation's secrets. And I have four immediate steps that I would take to prevent another Snowden-like leak.
Now, of course, Tulsi Gabbard has been questioned on various issues ranging from Russia-Ukraine war, her remarks on whistleblower Edward Snowden, of course, Section 702, and more by the senators. But hey, we get to celebrate because President Donald Trump secured another cabinet confirmation Wednesday as the Senate approved Tulsi Gabbard as his Director of National Intelligence, DNI, in a 52-48 vote. The confirmation followed party lines, with the lone GOP exception being former Senate leader Mitch McConnell.
Oh, geez.
Republican out of Kentucky who opposed her, of course. Okay, the deep state is real, folks. You got to watch them. They're sneaky, they're snakes, and they've got to go. But Gabbard's nomination faced early challenges in the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, but she rallied key Republican support to push her bid forward. Now, with the strategic backing of Chairman Tom Cotton, that is a smart man. Tom Cotton is a smart man. We need more like him. And Vice President J.D. Vance, doesn't get any stronger than that. She won over critical holdouts, including Senator Susan Collins out of Maine, Republican, and Todd Young, Republican out of Indiana. Her confirmation prevailed despite strong opposition from Vice Chairman Mark Warner out of Virginia and Senate Democrats who made an impassioned case against Trump's DNI pick. The significance of RFK and Tulsi is staggering, folks. We have to understand that these cabinet picks are not just exceptional. They're not just capable. They are an absolute threat to the Democrat left elites. Now, for conservatives, this move is a masterstroke, bringing in leaders who have challenged the establishment from both sides of the aisle. Kennedy, a long skeptic of unchecked bureaucratic power, will bring a sharp eye to government overreach, ensuring that health and regulatory agencies serve the people, not special interests. And then there's Tulsi, a staunch advocate for national security and an unapologetic truth teller, will inject a much needed dose of common sense into the intelligence community. Now, this is what will reinstill trust in American government and especially in our abbreviated agencies. Prioritizing American interests over partisan agendas. Okay, this is more than just political maneuvering. It's a signal that the Trump administration is committed to uniting reform-minded leaders who put principles over party. With Kennedy and Gabbard in key positions, I fully expect a government that's less about political theater and more about protecting liberties, strengthening national security, and restoring faith in these institutions. It is so beyond needed and overdue. Their presence reinforced the Republican vision of a government that serves the people first, cutting through red tape, defending free speech, supporting the Constitution, okay, and ensuring that American future is driven by innovation and sovereignty and strength. That's what we need. This is just an all-around win. Now, all I need is finally, I need Kash Patel. And you know that. And I'm going to keep saying that's going to be a great episode. But we need to move on. Now we need to move far east. Far east and left leaning to Massachusetts. Not sure if you've heard, but the city of Worcester had a circus council meeting, which actually became more of a clown show. You know what? Don't take my word for it. Just look at the video. Watch for yourselves and see what I mean.
I need the city to protect me because the federal government won't. And if you think you're afraid of Trump, you should see how afraid of Trump I am.
Can you wrap up, please?
Yes, I can. If you say that you're afraid of Trump and that's why you don't want the city to be a space, safe space for trans people, you better prepare for trans people to make this a very unsafe space.
I'm shaking right now. I don't want to be here.
Can you wrap up, please?
I'm sorry, am I taking too long pleading for my life?
You remembered how many children I have and that two of them are trans.
I speak as both the B and the T in the LGBT.
I'm multiply disabled. I have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which is a connective tissue disorder that causes me immense physical pain. I'm on the autism spectrum, and I have narcolepsy, and I couldn't drive myself here, so I had to hide from my driver that I was in drag, which is not an easy thing to do in drag.
I do not want to be here. It's my day off. I do not want to be in your DMs.
You know, city councils used to be about fixing potholes, balancing budgets, and maybe renaming a park after some guy who did something vaguely important 200 years ago, something like that. But not in Worcester. Oh, no. No, 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 no. This week's council meeting looked less like a government body and more like a live action Tumblr thread. Dozens of activists stormed in, screaming at the top of their lungs, demanding, threatening, literally, really threatening that Worcester be declared a sanctuary city. And they got it. They actually decided in their favor for transgender people. Because apparently, in the grand scheme of human suffering, the greatest tragedy of our time is being misgendered by the barista at Starbucks, forcing you to endure a 5-second emotional breakdown before you order your oat milk latte. Now, let's talk about the threats, because nothing screams we are marginalized like telling the city council, and I quote, "We will make Worcester ungovernable if you don't comply." And they did comply. Ah, yes. Because Worcester is currently a well-oiled machine of peace and prosperity, right? No crime, no failing infrastructure, just a utopia waiting to be ruined if we don't give in to the demands that sound like they were brainstormed at a drum circle. What exactly does sanctuary city for transgender people mean anyway? What exactly is that? What exactly does that look like, right? What is the concept? Free hormone therapy kiosks at every street corner? A mandatory pronoun checkpoint at the city limits? A special task force to arrest anyone who accidentally calls their waiter dude? A citywide ban on using the word binary? I don't know. Is it public shaming for anyone who dares to ask, "What are your pronouns?" As if there's some kind of cultural capital. Instant community service for anyone caught saying "ladies and gentlemen" in a public speech. I mean, what is it exactly? Is it mandatory sensitivity training every time someone says "common sense"? And let's not forget the irony here, folks. There is irony. Allegedly, fighting for inclusion and tolerance are the first ones to threaten, they are the first ones to scream, and they are the first ones to throw public tantrums when they don't get their way. If you so much as raise an eyebrow and ask, could you maybe define what you mean when you say, or when you want to start rewriting city policy, you're labeled a bigot and threatened with cancellation, which these days is scarier than a tax audit at this point. Meanwhile, actual Worcester residents, the people who just want to work, get up and go to work every day, they're working the streetlights and safe neighborhoods, right, are left watching their city government get hijacked by a group of professional grievance merchants. If this is the future of activism, Worcester might want to declare itself a sanctuary city for common sense, because it's completely extinct. And that is a savage truth. Thanks for joining me. Please like, share, subscribe, and leave a positive review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. And remember, as always, be bold, be strong, be faithful, be true. Till next time, I'm Cicely.
The Savage Truth with Cicely Davis is a production of Front Page Magazine and the David Horowitz Freedom Center. Reproduction of this podcast without express written consent is prohibited.